Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
So before we get to our podcast with Australian Open finalist from 1 year ago, Luke Saville, the Australian doubles specialist who still furthers his career on the single side as well, wanted to kind of give you guys an update on where Noah and I are, where we are with life. Before we get into it, Noah joining me via the Bluetooth here on the old mixing board that we have here. How are you?
I'm okay. I just dropped Jamie off at the airport. It'll be a few weeks and she'll actually meet me in Las Vegas for my birthday after I play a future here in the U.S. So yeah. Getting ready to go down to Florida. I am actually hunkering down a little bit. We're supposed to have, I think, like 16 inches of snow tomorrow. So right. Yeah, I'm not moving.
Okay. So I'm.
What about you?
I'm in Tulsa. We've just had a lot of rain. It turned into snow. Like both of my parents in Illinois have snow. My dad has like 12 inches roughly of snow today. As we wake up on Sunday morning, sent a picture to us this morning. I'm struggling a little bit watching the Australian Summer of Tennis. I decided not to go with the idea of quarantine being gone for at least 4 weeks from my daughter. My thank you to Tennis Australia for giving me as much time as I needed to make that decision and giving me opportunity and space should I want to come. And I'm really, really grateful. And I know that the American commentators that went, I think the only two, there are three. Kevin Skinner, Nick McCarville, and Jill Krabus, I believe, are the three American commentators for the World Feed team that went down there. And seeing their pictures and everything, I'm so jealous that they're just walking around Melbourne. There are people at the exhibition in Adelaide, and then competition started on the WTA side yesterday. And I'm jealous and at the same time just really sad that, you know, the rest of us in the world don't have the same opportunity, that they do down in Australia. They sacrificed. Don't get me wrong. They sacrificed a lot and had a really difficult quarantine. We'll talk with Luke Saville about that coming up in just a little bit. But it's such a sacrifice. But now the rewards are so great compared to what the rest of us are experiencing in life.
Honestly, it's even tough to see the ball right behind your head. I see the AO up there.
Yeah.
And my anger has kind of turned to jealousy and sadness as well. I mean, there's two reasons. One, you know, to see people having the ability to play and, well, the warm weather helps, but to play free in front of fans and, like, having that excitement, you know, there is a jealousy there. I think as well, you know, it's just, it's just difficult to see tennis as a whole being played with such ease, you know, when we're struggling here to kind of make it. And then as well as people don't always remember, we brought it up a few times, but Australia last year, especially for qualifiers, was like kind of the first time we heard the word quarantine. You know, this was the fires that started in 2020. And for us, you know, I feel like I haven't had that, you know, real Australian Open Melbourne experience in some time now. You know, like it's been a few years. So disappointing not to be out there. Obviously, I decided not to go to qualies, which was in the Middle East and didn't really give me the opportunity, but disappointed nonetheless. So it's, I'm happy for the guys. I just want them to now get past the quarantine mentality and just like, okay, we're here.
Yeah.
You know, whatever happens, I get the best of five is going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of, you know, barriers. But for right now, play some tennis. You know, let's see if we can enjoy it, because yeah, I feel like the hype has been built so much. Yeah. I mean, we've spoken about this on the side where, like, has it started yet? Has it not? Because you see these videos for so many weeks. But hopefully the excitement is still going to be there once the ball drops, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I know that you and I, we almost recorded a podcast about our feelings about the people in quarantine and the complaining and whatnot. And
yeah.
I think it was probably for the best that we didn't. and I think most of our listeners would probably know where we stand on that, all things considered. But yeah, that part was, I think, frustrating for us as well. But yes, you know, it's a complex question. You know, you know it as a competitor. If you're not able to really go at it for 2 weeks and then have to suddenly go at it, that's a tough ask, and we certainly know that. So the complexity of the feelings you're seeing, I think people's personalities are really coming through in these difficult moments.
On display.
And yeah, I don't want to speak about it too long here, but I think there are definitely some people that I'm having to realize I just can't associate with anymore, if I'm being perfectly blunt. And I'm so appalled at some of the behavior that I just find myself like, I don't have any use for them. And I think we've all had to kind of make those decisions, especially here in the States, the political discussions and all that have happened. But yeah, this last month, there are definitely some people who I'm just like, okay, I can live without you now.
Yeah. I mean, for better or for worse, it's definitely highlighted the situation, you know, whether in tennis, whether it's people, personality, whatever the case may be, it's been on display. So seeing it, you know, up hand, especially on social media, where like you have time to think about things and then post them.
Yeah.
You know, you and I are definitely not perfect, and I've done it, but you know, I like to think that most of my posts, you know, I've at least thought them through whether they're going to have negative impact or not, but it's a little bit disappointing to see some of this stuff. So, you know, I just hope they take this moment to reflect a little bit, which, you know, 50% of them have, you know, I like to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's just play some tennis. Hopefully no other distractions after that. And because we don't know what the next at least 4 months looks like. You know, who knows, by the time US Open, we could be in a different place. But at least for the next 4 months, especially looking at the States and a few other areas, we don't have tournaments. So enjoy the fact that you're here now. You did the time, quote unquote, and now you're ready to play some tennis.
You won a tennis tournament, a UTR event down in Florida a few weeks ago. It's obviously different playing a UTR event than it is an ATP, whether it be a Challenger or a Futures. It kind of walk us through how you handled the pressure, considering it's a different type of pressure than it has been for you over the last several months.
Yeah, you know, at times I kind of forget, you know, and this is going to come off arrogant, so bear with me, people. You know, getting to a level that I don't necessarily play at all the time, you know, I've done probably a future a year. I did it right before I won Tallahassee. The year before that, I did actually, after I won my first round at Del Rey 250, and I went back to a future just to get extra matches for whatever the reason. But, you know, a lot of the players there kind of put you on a pedestal, you know, whether it's me and Stefan, they put him on a pedestal as well. You know, it kind of puts it in perspective a little bit. You're like, wait, even after, you know, usually I'm not playing that well prior to, even after a few bad losses or not feeling well, like, these people still consider you to be extremely good tennis players. And you almost forget that situation sometimes. With that is the positives of like, wow, like, you know, it is okay. Like, everything can still be okay. We could still come back from this. And, you know, the only negative would come is the pressure that, you know, affiliates with something like that. And, you know, getting through the first couple rounds, it's like a, what happens is it's a round robin of, I think, six or eight draws or something like that. And then the top player from each, So the top player from each goes into the quarterfinal of three draws, you know, one person from each doesn't play. And then you have three draws, and then the top draws for the winner, which I was a part of. I played six matches, and, you know, at any level to get six wins under my belt feels good, especially under that pressure and not giving up more than four games a set. Whatever people want to say about the level of tennis, I was happy with my display. I was happy to get matches out there. For me right now, it's trying to find, you know, that happiness on the court, you know, the enjoyment, the factors away from trying to be top 100 in the world, because that's not going to come. Or even if it does come, the happiness won't follow. You know, I've seen that before when I hit milestones. So it's really being honest with myself and saying, hey, what is it going to take for you to be happy? So it's good for the UTR to have so many of these tournaments. You know, there are definitely things they can improve upon. Do I want to, you know, go into those now? I don't, because, you know, this is early on for them. So let's see, you know, what they come back with. But just to have those kind of matches for a lot of players, especially now with futures getting canceled left and right.
Yeah.
It's nice to be out there playing, and I'll be playing possibly one or two more of them. They're literally, like, I think every week now. I keep looking, and like a few in Barcelona and a few in Florida, and California has one a week, I think. So it's good for them to get this kind of cash to make it happen.
Yeah. And then you've got the futures coming up, and I saw the player entry list. I saw Mitch is on it, Mitchell Krueger. Kozlov is on it, JC Arrigoni. I mean, it's a pretty decent level for a futures.
Yeah. I mean, you have to expect that. Again, you're looking at least the US, schedule. You know, we had a few that canceled on us already. You know, you're looking towards the summer, and you have like what, seven futures, maybe three or four challengers. You know, we're looking towards the summer. So people are, you know, picking and choosing, and for some players, they're fine with going overseas. I think Eubanks is going to South Africa. Pretty sure Ty is thinking about going to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
You have players like that are thinking about going overseas, and, you know, me personally, I'm on the mindset to do that, and I don't know about other players, and it comes down to ranking as well. These are going to be tough cutoffs for a lot of these tournaments, so you have to pick and choose. And real quick, guys, I just kind of reactivated my Twitter, my personal one. I'm not sure if you guys knew that I was off of it for a while, but I feel a little bit better. I created my habit of, you know, not posting, so I feel comfortable. And just seeing the comments on the Patreon podcast that we did of how emotional, and I really appreciate the support. It was kind of, even though we were a little tipsy, it was tough for us to do that and then post it out to the world. So, I mean, the feedback that we got was amazing, and I really hope people enjoyed it, because bearing our soul a little bit out there. So it was easier said than done, but once we posted it, we were a little nervous for the reaction. Yeah. So thank you, guys.
Our guest today is Luke Saville, the Australian. As we mentioned, he was a finalist in last year's Australian Open doubles draw. He and Max Purcell. It was for me, I know it was a final I was greatly interested in, considering on the other side, the winners, Rajiv Ram, the former University of Illinois All-American, and Joe Salisbury, another guy who has come through the challenger ranks over the last couple of years, as Purcell and Saville did as well. What Luke is a couple of years ahead of you, but I know he was somebody that was very much on your radar when you were a junior as well, correct?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was somebody that I watched kind of my first year breaking through the ITF junior circuit. I lost to Peli Wu in, I think it was either round 16 or quarters of French Open juniors. And this was the year that, like, they battled it out, you know, going tit for tat on Grand Slams. And, you know, it was interesting to see both of them were kind of in this similar situation. I think Peli Wu might have been a little higher regarded, but they were both players that people thought, you know, this is a top 100 breakthrough within the next 2 to 3 years. And, you know, both of them, I think, breaking through at least the top 250 fairly quickly, if I'm not mistaken. But then the road from there was difficult. And I know they both went back to around 300-400 in the world at times.
Right.
And still trying to push their way back. I think Luke got to around 150 as a high ranking. So it's interesting to see kind of that pressure and now to see that translate to the level of doubles. I don't know about you. I wouldn't have guessed that it would have his game would have translated that well.
I did.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like the way he thought on the court. I saw him moving well, even when I played him in Tasmania first round, and it was very difficult. He saw the court differently. You know, he couldn't do everything with the ball he wanted to, but what he did well, he did very well. He moved very well, and he saw the court. But earlier on, when I saw him, I didn't expect him to be as good of a doubles player. So great to see the success that he's had, and excited to talk to him.
So here is our interview that we recorded last week as he prepared for the ATP Cup, which will start, I guess it'll be tonight if you're listening on Monday night, Tuesday over there in Australia. It is our interview with Australian Luke Saville.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
It's great to have you on, Sav. And number one, I don't like the fact that you always kick my ass in fantasy football. That's frustrating for me. But the main question that people want to know, Sav, is how is tofu sausage? How is the preparations for tofu sausage going for the Australian Open?
Yeah, that's the hard-hitting question, Mike. No, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, preparation's going really well. Obviously, there's been a bit of talk about the bubble here. You know, very fortunate and happy that I've already done my hard quarantine end of November, early December when I got back from Europe. And it's been tough for a lot of those guys. But, you know, I think Australians, in a selfish way, we can use it to an advantage, if you like, a little bit. You know, we've been training, you know, getting as many hours as we need. And those guys are doing it reasonably tough. But, yeah, you know, personally, I couldn't be in better shape, to be honest, coming into the ATP Cup on Tuesday. That's a huge opportunity for me. My first time representing Australia, you know, since Junior Davis Cup 10 years ago. So it's a, you know, a big occasion for myself, and then the Australian Open the week after. So preparation's going really well, you know, hitting a fair bit, and really just looking forward to some competition now.
It's one thing for us here in the States, obviously, Sav, to kind of look from afar and see what all everything that's happening with the quarantine and everything like that. What's it been like from your perspective in terms of kind of how you're consuming the media, how the Australian response is? Are people actually mad at these tennis players who are complaining a little bit? What's the general feel there, if you can give it to us?
Yeah, early days when the players got here and they were sort of stuck in their room for 2, 3, 4 days, and then there was a few of the positive cases that came out on the planes, and a few were stuck in hard quarantine for 14 days. And, you know, obviously Australians that had traveled abroad, you know, last year and the start of this year, it's mandatory for the 14 days, you know, cooped up in a hotel room, unable to leave. So, you know, when there was a few complaints and whatnot, you know, the general consensus in the community, you know, there was some frustration there. You know, sort of, you know, the professional tennis players, international tennis players, a little bit entitled, if you like. And, you know, but I think there was just sort of a miscommunication there. A lot of the players didn't understand what would happen if there were some positive cases on those planes. And I think that's where the anger was coming from, mostly from their point of view. But I think, you know, the dust has sort of settled a lot in the past, you know, week. You know, those guys and girls are getting out of their quarantine, out of their hotels in the next, well, starting tonight here in Australia. So, you know, it's really settled down. I think everyone, you know, the majority of people are very thrilled to have an opportunity to, you know, play outside of a bubble, you know, for the Australian Open and the lead up events next week. And I think, you know, the community, you know, a few, you know, probably last week were a little bit angry, but now, with the Australian Open on the eve, you know, I think everyone's just looking forward to watching some tennis, and hopefully we'll have some crowds. So, you know, since professional tennis has returned, if you like, there hasn't been many crowds. So I'm hoping, you know, the Australian Open's going to run smoothly.
I want to take this conversation back just a few years. You said you were brought up Junior Davis Cup. I remember kind of my breakthrough into the juniors a little bit, seeing Luke Saville play Philippe Pelliwu in finals of Grand Slams, dominating. Kind of take us through that process for you, you know, where you were basically dominating juniors,
representing Australia, and then the transition to professional tennis?
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know, obviously it hasn't gone as smoothly as I would have liked, you know, the last, you know, 7-8 years since, you know, coming out of the juniors into the professional ranks. It's been difficult. It's, you know, it's very, obviously I get asked a question quite a bit. I was number one in the world junior. I won a couple of junior grand slams and got to 150 ATP and couldn't quite make that breakthrough. And now I'm sitting at 370 and, you know, sort of treading a little bit of water in the rankings a little bit. And, you know, it's just been difficult. I go back to, you know, potentially I wasn't quite ready to make that transition into the professional ranks, whether it was, I don't think mentally. I think mentally as a 17, 18-year-old, I was quite mature. You know, potentially just in my game, technical, tactical, whatever it might have been, just to make that next step, you know, professionals, men, they really expose, you know, holes in your game if you've got any. And, you know, potentially I had a few of those and couldn't quite make that transition. I started to have a run at it when I got to my career high at 150. I qualified and won a round at Wimbledon. Lost to Dimitrov there, beat Thiem, who was, you know, fairly fresh on tour at the time. I think he was 70 in the world, and then had a back injury, which kept me out for a few months, but by no means an excuse. But that was untimely for sure. But, it's, you know, it's funny, you know, I feel like I'm 26, almost 27 in a few days at 370, but I feel like I'm playing some of the best tennis, in my career. And, I've had some success in the doubles as of late in the past couple of years, but I feel like our improvements have just, you know, they've shown on the doubles court, and, you know, I'm hoping some of those improvements will show on the singles court in the future.
Yeah. How do you balance that right now? I know it's a question you get a lot, but you and I talked, I think about a year and a half ago when you were in Max, were having such a great run in 2019. I think we talked in Winnetka, if memory serves, and you felt that this was, you know, the double success was great, but you still valued yourself as a singles player. How do you kind of balance that now when your opportunities at the doubles level it's so great in terms of the finances, and it's a lot different than what you might get at the challenger futures level for a singles player?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. It's very tricky. I think when we chatted, I was still, you know, barely inside the top 100 in doubles, and now I'm sitting at 37. So it's another conversation again. You know, I can guarantee myself basically in every doubles tour event, Masters, Grand Slam now, which is obviously great financially. As you know, it's an expensive sport to travel with expenses, and being Aussie as well, you know, a lot of plane tickets and accommodation and whatnot, and to bring coaches away. So, you know, there's definitely that cherry there for me to pursue the doubles and go full time into that. But, you know, sort of the way I look at it is, you know, I'm only this age. I only can have a crack at singles right now if I decide to go doubles. And then I say in a few years, damn, I wish, you know, I stayed with the singles. You know, definitely could be too late. So it's definitely a tricky one. And then in terms of training, I'm still training predominantly singles and really working hard at my game. But it just gets interesting when I have the ATP Cup, you know, in a few days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm obviously in that team for doubles. So the last couple of weeks, John Pearce and myself have been trying to fine tune our chemistry and play quite a few doubles practice sets and whatnot. And so it's just, you know, it's just that balancing act right now. But, you know, the passion's still very much with the singles as well. I love singles. I think it's a true test of tennis. You know, doubles, you know, sometimes you can play a match and you sort of, you know, the match is gone just like that. You don't really know what's happened. Whereas singles, it's the ultimate test of movement, mentality. You know, sometimes it drags 2, 3, 4 hours. So, you know, I feel like it's the ultimate test, but I'm enjoying trying to balance both singles and doubles right now.
For some of the listeners, just to explain, kind of you spoke about the balance, but with your ranking being about 300 spots apart or so, explain how you have to give up, you know, deciding whether the next week you go play qualifying event or do you play doubles and how that works. And, you know, you say that, you know, the passion's there for singles, but not that you would necessarily have to give it up, but not necessarily that you wouldn't get back there very quickly, but you can't maintain both. I mean, it gets very difficult with, you know, you want to progress your ranking, you want to get those points. And especially in doubles, the points are extremely top heavy. You know, what is that like for you to really choose between tournaments? Do I go play Challenger, even qualities of a Challenger, or do I go play a Masters 1000?
Yeah, it's been difficult. You know, it's a funny one because Max Purcell and myself, we made the final of the Australian Open and went from, you know, roughly 80 to where I am now 40, and then basically the tour stopped. So right. It's been, I haven't really had a real crack at dealing with those situations you're referring to. When the tour restarted and, you know, came over for the US Open Cincinnati and then went on to Europe, there are a few situations where we were still entering singles most weeks and, very difficult. You know, we played, you know, sometimes doubles can start quite late and, you know, we bombed out sort of, we lost our matches on the Thursday and Friday and then we found out we were in qualies on Saturday in a completely different city. So that happened three or four times where I snuck in and it's, and Max, his ranking's a little bit higher than myself and he had a few more situations like that. And it's really not easy rocking up to a different city, completely different conditions the night before, even the morning of. That happened a couple of times and really gearing up to play singles when, you know, obviously there's not many expectations, but these guys you're coming up against are, they're predominantly for singles and I've been preparing, getting used to the conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So it's definitely, you know, like you said, it's going to be a decision where, you know, eventually I might have to make and commit fully to doubles. But, you know, in my eyes, if, you know, the calendar returns to some sort of normality, I feel like I can mix in a few challenges here and there, potentially a couple of futures. And like you said, hopefully, you know, post a few results on the doubles to sustain that ranking around where I am. And then hopefully try and get my ranking, my singles ranking, you know, hopefully inside 250 where I can go play a tour event heavy schedule where I can guarantee myself doubles most weeks and then sneak into a lot of qualies as well. But it's a very tricky situation, no doubt.
A lot of people don't know kind of the jump. You know, I refer to it as a jump. It's kind of making inside 75, possibly just breaking into the top 100. You know, you haven't seen in singles. You got very close to it. And I joke around all the time that it's one of the most impossible things to do, and I haven't done it yet. But talk about it for doubles. You know, what does it take to make that initial breakthrough? Because I'm not looking at the numbers here, but it's something like 640,000 points or something like that.
I just before you answer that, just so player or fans get an idea, you and Max won 7 Challenger titles in 2019. Your ranking went from the beginning of the year to 120. When you came into the Australian Open last year, you were at 82. I mean, that's a 38-spot jump after winning 7 Challenger titles.
This is before Australia.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah, that's some good stats there, Mike. it was definitely – it was very difficult. I remember when we were trying to break inside the 100, and we had to win a Challenger, and we did to break inside. I think we moved from maybe – roughly sort of 101, 102 to 99 and we won a Challenger. So, something like that. And it was difficult because, like Noel was referring to, there's just so many points in doubles. A lot of guys, because of the, I guess the effect on the body, you can play, basically every single week and a lot of doubles guys do. So, it's, you know, a lot of guys are, you know, putting points on the board and it's very difficult to make that, transition. So, yeah. And then, you know, we felt like we were playing a really high level at Challengers and, the few opportunities we got at Grand Slams, you know, mainly just wild cards into the Australian Open each year, we weren't far off making, you know, making some noise at that next level. And, you know, eventually came, last year at the Australian Open, we got a wild card and obviously took that opportunity. But it just showed that, like Noel was referring to, that the challenger level is very difficult. There's a lot of very tough players, and they're very hungry, you know, to break inside that top 100. There's really 100 spots for, you know, 1,000 very, very, very good players. So, and the double is very much the same. So now that, you know, that big result we've sort of we've broken through. We're in the 40s now, and then I guess that next level is just as tough. So. It's there's no real secrets there. It's just, you know, keeping your head down, working hard, you know, all those sorts of things that you hear every day. But
Sav, I'm going to interrupt you here because you and I, as we're in a fantasy football league together with a lot of double specialists. And you know, I think about some guys like Robert Galloway and Nate Lammons. I mean, some of these guys who are you've been with them at the challenger level the last a couple of years ago, and you know they're close. I watched you at the U.S. Open playing Kravitz and Mies, who a couple of years before were at that challenger level. How do we get it so that there are more opportunities for these guys who are 110? You know, the difference isn't that big from 110 to 75. How do we get it so that there are more of them who are at least able to have some more opportunities?
It's tough, Mike. Obviously, it's especially with the tour right now with the prize money sort of not at an ideal, situation as well. And not many challenges on. I really don't know. I probably you guys have more of an idea, but it was very difficult winning challenges some weeks and, walking away, pretty much breaking even when we were doing that. It's just, it's really, really tough at the challenger level. Like I said, it's very, very competitive and the players are really, really good. And that's why you see so many situations when, challenger hardened players, they get a bit of a, they might get a wild card into a tour event or into a Grand Slam and you see them break through because their level is very good and the challenger, the tough. And that jump is, not as big as what it seems. So, it's obviously there's much more money at the Grand Slams and the tour events. There's no secret there. And, it's just if we could find a way for more players to make a living, obviously that's the first priority. With COVID right now, this year is looking very, very suspect.
Yeah.
And it's just a really, really tough time for professional tennis players, to put it nicely. And hopefully, we can just, get on top of this situation worldwide and the tour returns to some sort of, normality like it was a couple of years ago.
I don't want to ask you more questions about doubles to make you feel like a double specialist, but you've been on both sides of it. And I think it's a unique situation. I want to hear this question because you've been on both sides is the idea, your opinion of the idea that, doubles players are second-class tennis players. You hear this a lot. It's the locker room. People say it, on Twitter or whatever the case may be. Kind of give your opinion on that and how that's affected kind of the marketing of doubles and the expansion of it.
Yeah. Obviously, I hear that a lot. And, I think that takes away from the product of doubles. But, I'm of the belief that doubles is a very unique and tough skill to perfect. A lot of the guys, what they do is very, very tough to master. So I personally really like watching doubles. I really enjoy it. I think it's, fast and exciting, and the short format is very good for the fans. Like I mentioned earlier, I think singles is the ultimate test. And you've got to be such a good athlete these days to play singles tennis. I think doubles, what the guys can do up at the net. And obviously it's very cutthroat from week to week as well. And, a lot of matches are decided in a couple of points. So I think that's great for the viewing. I watched a lot of the matches when Max Purcell and myself were in London as an alternate end of last year. And I really enjoy watching it. And I think if we can keep promoting doubles, that's obviously would be great for tennis. But there's obviously a lot of other issues as well, like creating more jobs and opportunities for more players, and really promoting that that challenger level. Because as Mike knows, I've played a lot of the ones in the States, and you guys do a great job, but it's very tough to sustain playing challenges, unless you go well in those weeks. If you're investing in yourself and bringing a decent support team, it's really tough to sort of make money. And at the end of the day, that's, kind of what we need to do. So it's a very tricky situation, doubles and the challenger level.
I know it's tough because Mike's basically my support system now, and it's been super difficult for me.
Yeah.
I'm the best coach he's got though right now, so it's a real shame. Yeah. Sav, as we start to wrap up here, obviously the ATP Cup, as you mentioned at the outset, I know it's a big moment for you, and kind of, I don't want to say culmination because there's so much left in your career to go. How do you appreciate this moment while also preparing for the gravity of the moment?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It's it's obviously an enormous opportunity for me, and it's 4 or 5 days out from playing that first match on Tuesday night against Spain, which is probably one of the tougher draws. So, I feel like when I sit here and just realize what it's how it's sitting with me, I'm very comfortable. I'm very excited to have that opportunity. Really my first representative opportunity for Australia. There's going to be some nerves out there, but if there wasn't, there's probably something a little bit wrong with me. But I'm really enjoying playing with Piercy right now.
Yeah.
He brings a nice energy on the doubles court, and having Leighton on the side, it's definitely going to feel like a Davis Cup atmosphere. Hopefully we can get a few people in the stands as well. But just super excited, very, very confident and comfortable with all the work I've done. Feel like the game, we've definitely shrunk a lot of cracks in my game, and just very, very confident that it's going to, hold up, under those circumstances. So just really looking forward to the opportunity.
I've always been, over the last several years, I know I've gotten to know you and Tomo and some of those players, and I've always been so impressed, Sav, with, I mentioned watching you at the U.S. Open this year, and I was sitting with Tomo for a while, and then Storm and Ellen came by, and there is such a maybe like an us against the world type mentality that really kind of shows in the Davis Cup as well. Can you kind of explain that to especially to us Americans, that idea of pride, so much pride in Australian tennis that you guys all seem to have?
Yeah, I think so, Mike. I mean, even like this week under these strange circumstances here in Australia, everyone's down here in Melbourne and we're sort of training all together. And there's definitely just a strong bond within Australian tennis. I think probably being so isolated, we do feel like it's us against the world a little bit. But we have a lot of American friends, a lot of British friends as well. But we do definitely get around each other. And if we're playing events internationally and there are Australians in the draw, good chances are you'll find them in the stands supporting each other. And I can't really compare it to you guys. I'm not really sure what the dynamics are like, but yeah, we all just get along really well with each other. Even if we, train in different cities, different states here in Australia, when we do get together at tournaments, it's just, it's kind of like we haven't left each other, and we can kind of kick it off and practice and whatnot. And that's, boys and girls on tour. So I really enjoy that. I feel like, us Aussies, we stick together. But I think it's a nice way to travel as well, knowing that you've got, some friends and whatnot, and most likely you have some support in the stands when it can be pretty lonely out there.
I know you and I talked via WhatsApp in, I think, maybe October or so, Sav, and you were just talking about how difficult it was to go from city to city and different quarantine to different quarantine. And I'm asking this as an American, and I know Noah and I have talked about this a lot. Do you, in Australia, do you have any appreciation for how lucky you guys are to just be able to, like, live life right now? I know there were a lot of hard sacrifices that were made to do it, but do you, I haven't seen my family, my friends for months. The only friend I've seen is effing Noah Rubin. It's terrible. And I just wonder if you and other Australians just have that appreciation for how hard you've worked and what it means to just live life right now.
Yeah, we do. Melbourne, where I live, did it fairly hard there for a while.
Right.
I think it was the strictest lockdown in the world. And that went for, I think, 4 or 5 months. We definitely see what's happening over there and in Europe. And, our hearts go out to all you guys. We just hope you get on top of it as soon as possible. And then obviously the tour, but, most importantly, the health and safety of, all the people there. So, we're we do feel lucky. We're living life reasonably normal here. Most of the state borders are open. We can play the Australian Open with crowds, which is definitely a big thing. Within Australia, it's been very comfortable. Traveling is going to be interesting as soon as we leave, and then coming back in with a hard quarantine. So that's probably, the hard quarantine is probably our biggest, defense right now from COVID. So that's been good to keep it out, I guess. We all see what's happening in the States, and we just hope you guys can get on top of COVID sooner rather than later, and get those numbers down.
Yeah, us too. Well, our best to your lovely dog, Dasha, as well. I'm a big fan of her jewelry, and I've got a 6-year-old. I've got to pick something up from Dasha at some point for my 6-year-old. I think she'll love it.
Nah, thanks a lot for having me on, guys. Really, thanks, really appreciate it. Big fan.
All right, thanks, and good luck with the ATP
Cup.
Best
of luck.
Thanks, Noah. Okay. Cheers.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.